This is White Sox Weekly, your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and a drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago. Now here's your host, Connor McKnight.
Good afternoon and welcome in to White Sox Weekly here on ESPN 1000 and the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. I'm Connor McKnight, and you can celebrate 125 years of White Sox baseball and lock in a 2025 ticket plan today. Be here for the biggest matchups, exciting new promotions, and opening day on Thursday, March 27th. Plus, get access to the best seats, the best value, flexible payment plans, savings on single games, and more. To secure your ticket plan, visit whitesox.com/2025. Nice weekend here in the city. Best of luck to those of you running in the Chicago Marathon come Sunday. I have fond memories of the Chicago Marathon. Not that I've run it myself. Just my first play-by-play assignment for another shop was actually calling the Chicago Marathon. That was a different era. So were my running days. Anyway, best of luck to those of you running. We've got some names in the running here as we start the show this afternoon. A couple of names thrown out there by some Bigfoot baseball reporters. John Heyman of the New York Post has a couple of names in his column published on October 10th. So back on Thursday is what we're talking about. I want to run you through some of these names, and you know, I don't think you know until you know. These are just a few names in a national reporter's report that might be attached to the White Sox interview process right now. I could give you one that we know, right? Grady Sizemore, we know, will be or perhaps even has been interviewed by the White Sox for the managerial job. You've got to guess that there's some sort of interest, probably serious interest, in Skip Schumacher of the Miami Marlins, formerly of the Miami Marlins, who is probably right now the biggest name out there with Terry Francona having gone to the Cincinnati Reds about a week and a half ago. In this John Heyman piece, he mentions Guardians bench coach Craig Albernaz as a candidate for Marlins manager, linked to the general manager Peter Bendix, a former Rays minors coach and a catching coach in San Francisco, for Gabe Kapler, who is now the assistant GM in Miami, so a lot of connections there for Craig Albernaz. There are three names that Heyman attaches to the White Sox here, and I'll read. It's just, these are two sentences, but don't worry, we're going to dive a little bit more into each one of these potential candidates in a little bit here on the show. Former Angels manager Phil Nevin, Cardinals bench coach Daniel Descalzo are among a long list of White Sox managerial targets. One big target is Rangers bench coach Will Venable, the seeming heir apparent in Texas, who turned down the Mets. They went with Carlos Mendoza and have ridden themselves to a big-time playoff success here in this offseason, or in this playoff schedule. I think, obviously, the manager is the forefront of the White Sox offseason storylines right now. That will quickly subside, right? I understand that the manager is a big-time component, as I know you do, of where the White Sox are headed in the future and what 2025 is going to look like, all that good stuff. But for my money, as soon as the manager gets hired, that we're going to be finding out about him, you know, kind of hearing about what he thinks about the personnel that currently exists in the White Sox organization and all that stuff. But we will quickly move on to what's going to happen to Garrett Crochet and what's going to happen to Luis Robert Jr., right? Are these guys trade candidates? Are they guys that are going to stick around? Are they both, right? Are they guys that are going to break camp with the team? Or are they guys and will be, you know, shopped at the deadline come, you know, July of next year? But I thought, you know, maybe just a little bit on each one of these candidates. See if we, you, anybody can find a common thread between some of these. So I in an effort to try and get a little, you know, a base down about some of the candidates that we're hearing about here, I've got some bio on each one of these potential White Sox targets. Let's start with the guy that we probably know the most about in terms of his coaching experience, Phil Nevin. California guy, he's 53, he turns 54 in January, big league player, drafted out of Cal State Fullerton. Maybe that's the thread here. Phil Nevin, Daniel Descalzo, Will Venable, Skip Schumacher, all those guys, Grady Sizemore, of course, all of them were major league players. And that's something that's different from where the White Sox were with Pedro Grifol. Anyway, Nevin was the kicker on the football team, was drafted first overall in the 92 draft by the Astros. I made that sound like he was the kicker for the Astros. He wasn't. He was the kicker at Cal State Fullerton and played baseball. That 92 draft was a weird one, or at least notable. Derek Jeter went number 6. Phil Nevin went number 1. And Hal Newhouser, a Hall of Famer, a scout for the Astros at the time, 17 years in the bigs for Hal Newhouser with the Tigers and the Indians. Hall of Fame class of 92. He went in with Tom Seaver and Raleigh Fingers and Bill McGowan. His number 16 is retired by Detroit. Anyway, Newhouser was screaming in the Astros draft room to take Jeter and not Phil Nevin. It's like a famous story. The Astros, though, took Nevin because they were worried about having to pay Derek Jeter a $1 million signing bonus. Newhouser quit in protest. I think Newhouser was right. The Astros couldn't see the forest for the trees, but you know, whatever it is. Johnny Damon was a 35th rounder in that 92 draft where Phil Nevin went 1-1. Jason Kendall went in the 23rd. It's not a great draft, which is neither here nor there. Shannon Stewart in the 19th round, Charles Johnson in the 28th, Rick Helling in the 22nd. Only 7 players, those players I mentioned, with double-digit wins above replacement totals in that draft. Nevin, one of them. Jeter and Damon turned out, obviously, the best players. Anyway, Nevin was called up by the Astros in 95, traded to the Tigers in August of that year, spent 96 and 97 in Detroit, 98 in Anaheim, 99 to 2005 with the Padres. That's where, you know, I really know him most, you know, my days in high school and stuff, and knowing that Phil Nevin was there and a power hitter with San Diego. An all-star in 2001, finished 21st in MVP voting that year, hit 306, on base to 388, 588 slugging percentage. He was traded to the Rangers at the deadline. The Padres just had to have Chan Ho Park, apparently. Nevin went from the Rangers to the Cubs for Jerry Hairston Jr. in May of 06, and went from the Cubs to the Twins for a player named later in August of 06. The Twins were his last MLB stop. Also, his only postseason experience as a player. The Twins were swept by the A's, not the Yankees, the A's that time in the ALDS. Nevin's a career 270 hitter with 208 home runs, 743 RBI. Then after playing, he did some broadcasting for Padres Radio and the College World Series in the late 2000s. He started out managing Indy League ball in 2008 and 2009, hired by the Tigers to coach Double A in 2010, moved up to Triple A, the Mudhens in Toledo in 2011, and was added to the coaching staff at the major league level for the playoffs of that year. Remember, that's Jim Leland and the 2011 Tigers. He was fired from Detroit's organization in 2013 when he was the AAA manager. The Diamondbacks jumped at him, brought him in for their AAA squad in 2014. Then that team went to the championship but lost. He interviewed for the Astros job in 2015. That job went to A.J. Hinch, and that team lost in the ALDS to the Royals. Nevin then left AAA Reno for the third base coach job with the Giants in 2017, was then the third base coach for the Yankees in 2018, stayed there until 2021, was not brought back in 22, so he hooks on as Joe Madden's third base coach with the Los Angeles Angels. And as you probably know, Madden was fired in June. Nevin got the interim tag and was brought back in 2023. He was not on a coaching staff in 2024. Nevin probably has a bit of a, you know, an old school, perhaps, approach. He was noted as a player and as a minor league coach for his temper. He is quick to let it loose a little bit, and certainly has, of all of these names that we know of, you know, outside of Skip Schumacher, who we're all kind of guessing is a target of the White Sox and certainly should be, given the fact that he's, you know, a former manager of the year, you know, has the most managerial experience. Phil Nevin does. Earned himself the managerial role after filling in pretty ably, I guess, as the interim for Joe Madden in 2022. So that's Phil Nevin. On to the next one. Daniel Descalso, California guy again, a third-round pick of the Cardinals out of UC Davis. He turns 38 next week, so congratulations to Descalso, even though it makes some of us feel old. He spent 2010 to 2014 with the Cardinals, 15 and 16 with the Rockies, 17 and 18 with the Diamondbacks, and 19 was his last MLB year with the Cubs. He tried for one more with the Twins in 2021. 2020 was messed up for all of us. He did not make the team, was left in AAA. He was on the World Series winner in 2011 with the Cardinals and had some big moments. He played for Tony La Russa, and obviously there's a connection there with the White Sox having Tony La Russa in the organization. Descalso lost in the NLCS in 2012, lost in the World Series to the Red Sox, lost to the Giants in 2014. In 2023, he started his coaching career, or at least his front office career. He was with the Diamondbacks as an operations assistant, a baseball ops assistant. So that means that he would have crossed paths with Josh Barfield, at least a little bit. Barfield now an assistant general manager to Chris Getz. Last year, with the Cardinals as their bench coach, Descalso gets his most, you know, kind of like on-staff managerial experience. A bench coach is a pretty significant role. He replaced, actually, longtime White Sox coach Joe McEwing. McEwing went upstairs, did not have... Oh, it's a funny story. McEwing went upstairs as a special assistant. Actually, it's kind of a funny story. Apparently, Descalso, for whatever reason, did not have the ball from his first major league hit until a few years ago. Some baseball collector found it or realized it was his through some sort of authentication service and then got it to Descalso a few years ago. That's probably not going to be a factor one way or the other in the managerial search, but I thought that you should know. All right, here's the other guy, Will Venable. He was a basketball and baseball player at Princeton, the second player to ever earn all Ivy League honors in both sports. He actually just played basketball in his first year, which is weird, or at least strange to me, because he's the son of a big leaguer, Max Venable. We'll get to that in a second. Will did not play until his sophomore year. His mom said, you should go try out. Things worked out great. He was a seventh-round pick to the Padres in 2005. He debuted in 2008. He is 41 years old, turns 42 just before Halloween. He has the most MLB hits and most homers of any Princeton alum. His dad, like I said, Max Venable, played for the Giants. Actually had a pretty long career. Max played 79 to 83 for the Giants, 84 with the Expos, 2 years with the Reds, and then a couple more with the Angels. Will Venable was a Padre from 2008 to 2015. He was traded to the Rangers in 15 and then to the Dodgers in 16. Those 15 Rangers lost the ALDS to the Blue Jays. That is the Joey Bautista bat flip series. There was a ball off the bat thrown by the catcher. It hit the bat of Shinsu Chu. Rougned Odor did some swinging. There was a whole, man, that was a series back in the day. Anyway, Venable's got, I think, probably the longest and most varied experience in terms of front office and coaching. He was named special assistant to Theo Epstein with the Cubs in 2017. Venable then was the first base coach for the team in 18 and 19 for the Cubs, and the third base coach in 2020. The 18 Cubs lost to the NL wildcard game to the Rockies. If you remember, neither team wanted or could score in that game. That was the one-game playoff era, too, so that was it, just one and done. The Cubs did not make the playoffs in 19 and lost the NL wildcard series to the Marlins in an expanded playoff in 2020. He left the Cubs for a bench coach job to Alex Cora in Boston in 2020, managed his first game in 2021, won that game 3-1. In 2022, he was an interim manager for Alex Cora after Cora tested positive for COVID. He was 1-5, Venable was, in his work as interim manager for the Red Sox for those six games, whatever that worth. He's been the associate manager and bench coach for Bruce Bochy and the Rangers since 2022. And like Heyman pointed out in his piece, most see Will Venable as the heir apparent to Bruce Bochy in Texas. It's an interesting situation there, too, because baseball is full of heir apparent scenarios, whether it's coaching staffs or prospects or broadcasters or whatever. You just never can quite rely on that sort of thing. And maybe the next best situation isn't the one that you've been waiting for this whole time. I think what's going to be an interesting thing for all of these guys is, you know, in a different way for each, what are their perspectives on a rebuild, right? I mean, I think that's the biggest question when it comes to the White Sox interviewing these managerial candidates. What are your preferences for how this rebuild goes? What do you need to have control of? What do you need to have communication on? What can you be fine not having control of? I think those are all really fair and informative questions when it comes to each one of these managerial candidates. And again, who knows? I just ran you through some of the names and some bio on some guys. Will Venable, Daniel Descalso, and Phil Nevin, because they were each mentioned in John Heyman's piece earlier this week as targets for the White Sox. There are other targets. We just don't know their names. There may be more targets developing. We won't know their names until we get a reporter dropping that kind of dime. We've heard some others. I'm going to wait to do more bios on managers probably till next week, because whether it's Clayton McCullough of the Dodgers with Bruce Levine of the Score has reported, or whether it's Skip Schumacher or Grady Sizemore or what have you, I'm going to wait, I think, just a little bit as we go here over the next couple of weeks to drop some bios, because one, they only inform us so much. Two, I think there are some other big things to talk about with this White Sox team. One of them is going to be, at least in my opinion, a pet thing of mine. I love the Arizona Fall League. We'll talk about this when we come back a little bit. But Paul Janisch, the director of player development, is going to join us at 1:30 here on the show. And we'll talk about the White Sox prospects that are in the Fall League this year, the expectations for each in the seasons. There's some big names down there, like Colson Montgomery and Grant Taylor. DJ Gladney, guy who had the game-winning hit for the Birmingham Barons in their championship game, the whole thing. So we'll talk to Paul at 1:30 about those players and the expectations for him in the Arizona Fall League. We got more White Sox Weekly on the other side, so don't go anywhere. I'm Connor McKnight on ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports on Twitter at ESPN 1000.
Welcome to White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. I'm Connor McKnight. Celebrate your special occasion in 2025 with the White Sox party area. Reserve your group outing today to get access to the top matchups and best spaces. For more information and to secure your group outing, visit whitesox.com/groups. Thanks for being with us this afternoon. We've got Paul Janisch, Director of Player Development for the White Sox, coming up at 1:30. We're going to talk about the White Sox prospects who are in the Arizona Fall League. Colson Montgomery, Grant Taylor, some other big names. We'll get to here just a little primer before we get to talk to Paul in just a few minutes. If you missed the first part of the show, we talked a lot about some of the big names mentioned as targets and or candidates for the White Sox open managerial job, as reported by John Heyman in the New York Post a little while ago, and some other guys too. You want to go back and listen to that, download the ESPN 1000 app. Each and every show here on White Sox Weekly is downloadable as an app. You can grab anything you missed, including what's going to be a really good interview with Paul Janisch coming up in just a few minutes, in case you've got some place to be. Maybe you're running the marathon, but are also a big White Sox fan. You have do you run the day before a marathon? I feel like probably no. I feel like you should probably take the day off if you are running the marathon tomorrow. But, you know, follow your training regimen, not, you know, whatever the heck I'm saying. But if you're in from out of town and listening to White Sox Weekly and running the marathon tomorrow, best of luck to you. I mean, truly, good luck. A couple of the names I wanted to mention. So we went through the bios for Phil Nevin, Daniel Descalso, and Will Venable, the targets, quote-unquote targets, mentioned by John Heyman in the New York Post. We've talked about Grady Sizemore quite a bit, Clayton McCullough a little bit as well. We'll probably talk about Clayton some next week. Bruce Levine of the Score has reported him as a candidate, not reporting Bruce himself as a candidate, but Clayton, of course, as a candidate for the job. We'll get to Clayton next week in terms of the bios go. I want to give a shout-out real quick to John Becker of FanGraphs. You can find him on Twitter at John, J-O-N, Becker, _. He's got the manager vacancy matrix, and what it does is it tracks all the names mentioned for open managerial spots and coaching staffs and front offices and other front office openings, all this other kind of thing, all the you know, non-player movements and news, and he tracks it all with links to the articles and whatnot. I actually found this the other day after I was reading through John Heyman's piece in the New York Post and going, man, I wonder if anybody has, you know, put this all together in an easily digestible and linked Excel sheet. And sure enough, John Becker of FanGraphs has. So you can look through there and you will see that for the White Sox, Clayton McCullough has been mentioned as a, quote, leading candidate. You can find the link to Bruce's reporting there. Grady Sizemore is a candidate, as quoted by, you know, Chris Katz, Will Venable, you know, the names we've mentioned. There's a whole bunch of other names mentioned as speculative candidates, and these range from anything like A.J. Pierzynski, guys that we heard about months ago, Sergio Santos, who has said he'd like to be interviewed for the job, Justin Gershley, who has been a longtime White Sox minor league coach and thought of as a manager in waiting for some organization, no doubt about it. He's got a great reputation. Buck Showalter, we talked a little bit about last week. John Gibbons, Chris Fetter, Ryan Flaherty, Don Kelly, Carlos Beltran, and of course Skip Schumacher, all of them, you know, mentioned as speculative candidates, more or less. And we'll, like I said, we'll kind of drop through some bios here the rest of the way. I think there's going to be a few more names potentially popping up as quote unquote speculative candidates. And here are the guys I'm thinking of that we may get into a little bit later. From Rock Kubatko, who covers the Baltimore Orioles for Mass and Sports, bench coach Freddie Gonzalez of the Orioles, Major League hitting coach Jose Hernandez, and co-hitting coach Ryan Fuller will not be returning to the Orioles coaching staffs in 2025. So Freddie Gonzalez, who has been a manager before, you would have to wonder about whether or not he's going to be getting some interviews and looking for his next managerial spot. Willie Harris, who has been a minor league manager in the White Sox system, a minor league coach, rather, in the White Sox system, and was the third base coach for the Cubs over the last couple of years, will not be coming back to the Cubs coaching staff. And you wonder if Willie is a guy that the White Sox would be interested in. Bruce Levine had some reporting done on this as well. And I think Willie's name has been in a lot of circles about being a potential manager. I mean, not only would you have the guy that made the catch out in left center field, but it's a guy who has absolutely earned his way into kind of the top tiers of major league coaches and is a well thought of guy for a managerial spot. So perhaps, perhaps that could be a candidate. And if he is, we'll get to the bio a little bit later. Coming up in just a few minutes, Paul Janisch, Director of Player Development for the White Sox, is going to join us here. We'll talk about the Arizona Fall League. I do this once a year, and it means a lot, so I'm going to drop it right here. The Arizona Fall League is absolutely terrific. If you are a baseball fan and you're listening to the show, so I'm guessing that you are, I highly endorse going down to the Arizona Fall League for a little long weekend trip. The Arizona Fall League has changed in terms of player construction a little bit. Like, who's down there isn't quite the same as the level of prospect or player anymore that was going down there when I was making my trips a few years ago. Guys like Vladimir Guerrero and Cody Bellinger and stuff like that were hitting tanks in Arizona at night, and it was a ton of fun to watch. You can get into just about any ball game for like $10. There's maybe 200 people at any given game, except for the Sunday night game in Surprise, that is, or, you know, kind of the Sunday night games at Salt River, where the Rockies and Diamondbacks split a facility. There's usually one or two games on Sunday nights, and those games tend to be, you know, kind of even the locals will head to that game, that kind of thing, the big ones, the night games, and those are a little bit more crowded. Man, you might see 1,500 people there. It's you and the ball players. It's you and the scouts that are there, and that's the cool part. I've had a lot of nights at the Arizona Fall League where I sit down and whether I planned it or not, I'm kind of close or within earshot of some scouts, and I get to hear what they're talking about. And for the most part, these guys don't talk to them during innings while they're working. But if you approach them in between innings or you grab a guy in the concourse or whatever, you'll know he's a scout too, by the way. Look for the team gear or the quarter zip that doesn't have team gear on it, but Oakley's and an Oakley tan. You're going to see the line, you know, from ear to eye. You'll see the Oakley tan and the Allbirds. That's a dead giveaway too. That guy's a scout. And if you want to talk to him, you know, yeah, who are you checking out? You know, what are you in for? That kind of thing. Who are you looking for? And that's usually enough to spark a conversation, and they can be really, really fun ones, really good ones, especially if you're, you know, willing to listen and willing to, you know, kind of spend a little time being told, not yet, or I got to wait, or whatever. It's a really, really, really cool league. It started on October 7th and will run, I think it's to November 16, November 15, something like that is where the championship is. So just about a month and a half of baseball. And, you know, the White Sox have some names down there in the Arizona Fall League. We'll talk about some of these guys, all these guys, with Paul Yonish in just a couple of minutes. But Colson Montgomery is in the Arizona Fall League. Tim Ulko, first baseman at AAA Charlotte and Birmingham this last year. DJ Gladney, who had the big hit for Birmingham and won the championship, he's in the Fall League. Michael Turner, who's a name I think we'll be keeping an eye on next season in the minors for sure, he's in the Arizona Fall League. Grant Taylor, who did not pitch a lot in his first professional season, had a lat strain, is back at it and pitched really well, getting rave reviews from Brian Bannister. And from a lot of outlets, is ranked as one of the best pitching prospects at the Arizona Fall League this year. Normally, you're going to see a lot more high-tier position player talents, and the pitching is kind of going to be a smattering of guys. But when you get the top-ish prospects in the Arizona Fall League, it's because an injury or something limited the innings for that player in the regular season, and then the Fall League is a way to get those innings back to that player. Peyton Paulette, Eric Adler, Anthony Huopi-Tuiyonotoa, all of them in the Arizona Fall League for the White Sox this year on the Glendale Desert Dogs, by the way. That's the team for the White Sox. That's where their players go. They're going to the Glendale Desert Dogs. That's who you're rooting for. It is a roster made up of the Sox players, Reds, Dodgers, Phillies, and Cardinals players. We'll talk about those guys when we come back in depth with White Sox Director of Player Development, Paul Yonish. That's next on White Sox Weekly.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
On app.
The ESPN Chicago app.
In HD.
FM 100.3 HD2.
And of course on AM.
ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. White Sox fans, customize your 2025 season with the new 10-ticket all-access pack and get access to opening day and the Crosstown Series against the Cubs starting at only $224. Pick the number of games and seats that work for your schedule. To purchase, visit whitesox.com/flexpack. White Sox Director of Player Development Paul Yonish is our guest here on White Sox Weekly this afternoon. First time on the show, Paul. Thanks so much for spending some time with us today.
Yeah, no, excited to be here and excited to talk about the Fall League. It's a good league, good time of year. Obviously a really good precursor to guys that are going to do some cool things in the big leagues, hopefully.
Let's start on the pitching side, if you don't mind. Grant Taylor is regarded by a lot as maybe the best pitching prospect in the Arizona Fall League this season. Obviously, workload's been an issue, what with injuries that have kind of affected his last couple of years. Kannapolis this season and made his AFL debut when the Glendale Desert Dogs scored 15. Nice day to see everybody hit on the first day of the season. You win a 15-13 game. You get to see everything. Tell me a little bit about Grant Taylor and what are the goals for him here in the Fall League?
Like you said, he had some injury issues during the season. He's extremely talented, right? Like we're really fired up about Grant for multiple reasons. Like the stuff, the makeup. You know, he's the kind of guy that he loves to pitch, man. He wants to get people out, and you know, it's the injury deal was unfortunate. However, it wasn't anything too severe, and so the Fall League for him is continuing to get his innings in for this year in preparation for next year. But yeah, it's a really exciting arm. It's, arguably it's almost as exciting as any other arm that we have right now, on the minor league side, with the exception of, maybe a Noah Schultz and a Hagen Smith type guy. But Grant's in a good spot. He's healthy right now. He's throwing the ball good. And just honestly, like it's our scouting department does a really good job on the makeup side, and Grant's no different, man. It's just a really good kid that we're excited about. He the kind of guy that you want to be on the major league team, hopefully at some point, and represent the organization.
One of the other arms that you've got there down in Arizona is, maybe you can settle this for me, because White Sox prospect fans have been going back and forth. Apparently there were a few interviews where Peyton Paulette was said, and then it's Paulette in some other places. And it's got all of White Sox Twitter, a fluffle and the whole thing. It's Twitter. It's what it does. What is Peyton's last name?
Yeah, it's I call him P, so y'all can call him whatever you want. I pronounce it Paulette, and you're probably gonna get me in trouble here, because he's actually getting married here in a couple weeks, and I'm probably gonna get in trouble for saying it wrong, but I think it's Paulette. But
we're gonna have to find out. We'll make sure we click the RSVPs on the right place to make sure the Paulettes get the gifts, I guess.
I think a good way to look at it is it's Peyton Bulldog Paulette. That's a good way to put it, because he's another one. He really likes to compete. He obviously spent the first couple of months of this year starting, and then we moved him to the bullpen, sometime in June, I think. And it was super fun to watch, because the rest of the year, man, he was in a different world and just threw the ball extremely well. It recovered very well from, pitching a little bit more frequently and he's gotten himself on the map, right? Like, he's out here in the fall league, and, we're just really excited about the prospect of him moving forward.
57 strikeouts and 44 and two-thirds innings, I think, in relief for Peyton. Is it easy for us on the outside looking in to say, well, this is clearly a guy that the White Sox have fast-tracked in a relief role? You can do that with arms like Peyton that have kind of made that switch at this point in their minor league career, and the fall league seems like a really cool proving ground for it.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, the conversion from a starter to a reliever is, if we're being honest, in most cases, it happens for everybody, right? Like, there's more relievers than there are starters. But, I wouldn't say that he's completely done starting necessarily. I think at this point we feel really good about him being in the pen, and that's likely what's going to be the case, going into next year. But he's a versatile guy. He's an athletic guy. He throws a ton of strikes. There was an uptick in the stuff, and from a mentality standpoint, there's something about Peyton that just, leverage situations really agree with him. Like I said, the competitor is real, and that in a lot of cases that lends itself to being a really good reliever. But look, at this point, we're excited that he's healthy. We're excited that he, like I said, finished the year as good as anybody, in the organization really for the last, 2.5-3 months of the season. And he's excited to be out here. I saw him the other day. He likes to keep the mood light. He's fun to be around.
Eric Adler, another name, closer for the most part with Birmingham, or at least toward the end there, and looked like, I was kind of looking through his game logs, Paul, and he just stopped walking guys in the last week of the season, and that seemed to have been it's the issue for a lot of young players too, right? But he just kind of stopped doing it for a while, and the stuff he's got and his ability to keep it off the barrel is pretty impressive. Is the goal, I guess, for Adler in the fall league here to just keep not walking guys?
Yeah, he's relatively speaking, he's just getting going on the pitching side, and he took some really big strides this year with regards to consistency, like you're referencing. And I give our pitching department a lot of credit for helping him understand, how to be consistent with regards to, a couple of different things. The way his body moves, the way his pitch repertoire best suits him, and some of those kinds of things. But he you got to give him credit, right? Like, at the end of the day, he's the one on the mound throwing the ball over the plate, and he's another one. He's a very, he's a competitor. He's a little bit more stoic than most, when he's on the mound. But the stuff is real, and I think it's going to continue to get better. He's a strong kid. He's going to, from a recovery standpoint and some of those kinds of things, from a routine standpoint, he's going to continue to hone that in. And we're excited about it. It's stuff's not going to be the issue with him either.
Anthony Huopitoyo-Natoa is the last arm that you guys have in the fall league. Pitched really well in Birmingham. Got to AAA, got hit a little bit. This is Anthony's second time in the fall league. He was there with the Rangers last year. What do you, as a development side, kind of look at in terms of guys' ability to repeat the fall league? Not that it's a bad thing necessarily, but a chance to go back there again gives a guy an opportunity to do, kind of what exactly?
Yeah, to reiterate, it's just more opportunity to develop and to throw and to continue hunting in. We didn't overhaul his repertoire by any means, but it is an opportunity to continue to throw in high level competition, and he wanted to be here. He wanted to come to the fall. He enjoyed it last year. I think he actually made the All-Star team last year out here. Just being able to provide that. He's a healthy kid. He's a strong kid. It's just more of the same, but the opportunity to continue to pitch and honestly just continue to get better at game planning and executing some of the stuff against specific hitters and those kinds of things.
We
We are talking White Sox.
This is White Sox Weekly.
If you missed the show, we put the podcast up on the ESPN Chicago app. So listen on your time.
White Sox Weekly. ESPN Chicago. Chicago's home for sports.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. I'm Connor McKnight. Sox fans, sign up to become a White Sox insider for updates on the 125-year anniversary celebration next season. Get all the latest updates on games, promos, breaking team news, and other exciting Sox content delivered free to your inbox. Visit whitesox.com/insider today. All right, back with the White Sox Director of Player Development, Paul Ioannish, here on White Sox Weekly.
Paul, obviously Colson Montgomery has been talked about a lot, and his season was not the one that I think a lot of White Sox fans wanted to see. I think you could probably say the same for Colson. And a lot has been written about his, you know, mental ability for taking, you know, the struggles that were in 2024 and turning them into something incredibly positive. It began to break for Montgomery later in the season. I guess, where do you see Colson now? How is the progress, you know, kind of changed some? What are the biggest issues that Colson is kind of worked through here over the last, I call it 6 weeks?
Yeah, it's first of all, I give Colson a lot of credit, and he and I have gotten to know each other and developed a pretty good relationship. He's extremely open. He's very, you know, you can talk to him about anything. You know, he did struggle the first portion of the year, and you know, I think there's a lot of variables there, right? Like, you know, In terms of being in AAA for the first time, he's still relatively young. This year was the first year that he's played the entire year healthy. You know, he played very solid defense at shortstop all year, and despite, you know, struggling offensively relative to what he's accustomed to, which I actually think says a lot about the makeup and you know, the ability to deal with some of this stuff is significant, because the big leagues is hard, and look, he's going to get that opportunity at some point, assuming health. And what he showed this year dealing with the adversity, I think we're going to look back on and really value. In terms of what he looks like out here, he's, again, I give him credit, because, you know, the willingness to want to come to the fall league, you know, just after having just played an entire season, understanding like the opportunity that it's, you know, he did play well down the stretch. He did want to continue to do that. He wanted to come out here and play well. And going into next year, we talked with him, and, you know, and kind of a joint decision, felt like that was going to give him the best opportunity, honestly, to come into spring training with an opportunity to hopefully to make the team, you know, depending on what's going on. But he's in a good headspace. He's had a good first couple games out here. Outside of getting hit in the back of the elbow, he got a little bruise in his tricep right now, but he's in good spirits, man. I'm fully expecting him to play well out here and you know, kind of bottle that up, have a really good offseason, and come into spring training kind of ready to go.
Tim Elko is a guy, and I know it's your first year in the White Sox organization, but Tim Elko is a guy who's been in the org for a little bit, 26 years old in December, and is a guy, and I love prospects like this, guys who start out as, you know, kind of organizational guys that put themselves on the radar and just refuse to stop performing. And that's kind of been Elko here over his last couple of years, Birmingham and Charlotte this last year. What's the ceiling for a guy like Tim Elko? You know, how good can this get?
Yeah. I mean, I think the ceiling is the big leagues, right? So he's, to your point, he's knocking on the door right now. He had a really good year, and, you know, helping Birmingham win the first half and then going to Charlotte and continuing to play well down the stretch. You know, I've got a really good relationship with the coaching staff at Ole Miss. I know Tim Elko's background, right? And he didn't just start playing well, right? Like, he's been doing it for a little while. You talk about teammate, you talk about culture, you talk about, you know, makeup. Like, this is who he is, right? He's infectious. He's you know, it doesn't matter, you know, background or country of origin in a locker room. Everybody likes Tim. So those are valuable qualities. And yeah, so when you ask me what the ceiling is, it's getting to the big leagues and performing, right? Like, I think we can all agree, like, he's got himself in a situation now where, like, who knows what could happen? Like, you know, he's a really good defensive first baseman. Obviously, he's going to have to wait on an opportunity to present itself to you know, get the opportunity to go to the major leagues. But and then he's going to have to perform, right? And so he's done that his whole life. You know, he's the kind of guy where, you know, people have kind of told him there's always, you know, well, you're going to get to this level and it's, you know, you're going to, you know, the struggle with the swing and miss or whatever the case might be. But if you're asking me my opinion, like in terms of guys that you're going to bet on, Tim Elko is one of them. And, you know, I'll go to battle with that guy, you know, any day of the week. So I hopefully that gives you an idea of what I think about Tim and kind of like what he means to the organization up to this point. And we'll be excited to watch his journey continue, man. He's just about as good as they get.
That's a heck of an endorsement. I would bet that DJ Gladney is a pretty similar one. I always think it's amazing to watch a guy who goes from high A to double A, or really takes that level jump and performs better at the harder level. Just for White Sox fans who didn't see it all, you know, they probably saw the game winner for Birmingham when the team won the championship. Gladney added 40 points on the average, 25 points on the on base, and 75 points on the slugging, moving from high A to double A. How?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, he's one of the examples that I point to this year, and man, I don't have a better word than proud to use to describe the year that DJ had. Like, it, there were some ups and downs early when he found out he was going back to Winston-Salem, which, you know, psychologically can be tough, and, you know, he had some injuries early. He tweaked an oblique that he had trouble getting rid of, you know, the first half of the season, which I think contributed, you know, in a lot of ways to him struggling early. And but look, let's make no mistake. Like, the ability, the pure talent is there. DJ can play. He can defend at all three outfield positions. He plays the game extremely hard. And I'm telling you, when you're standing next to a batting cage and he's taking BP, like, it's different. Okay. So, like, his ability to impact the baseball is unique. So, and, you know, from an approach standpoint and all that stuff, I give our staff so much credit there in Winston-Salem and Birmingham both for just helping DJ this year in a bunch of different ways on and off the field. But and for him to get the walk-off hit in Birmingham, you know, that for his year to culminate with that type of a, you know, celebrated event is just, it's really hard to put into words, like how perfect that type of an ending was. And so really just proud of DJ, excited that he's out here. He's a talented guy that is just grinding at getting better every single day. And so we're just here to support him and going to try to help him continue to hone it into becoming, you know, a productive major league player.
Last guy the White Sox sent to the Arizona Fall League, Michael Turner, and he caught just 46 games in 96 games of work in the minor leagues this year. Edgar Caro being on a roster with him for a big bulk of the season is probably the issue for it. I would guess, Paul, that, you know, Turner, who played really well last year and had a good season this year, just you want him to have the gear on more, right? I mean, this is the essence of more baseball for Michael Turner here in the Fall League, right?
That's correct. Yeah, and look, the situation in Birmingham was a fortunate one with him and Caro there, and obviously Caro played more than him at, you know, the first half of the season. But that's not indicative of the type of player that, you know, Michael Turner has the ability to catch in the big leagues. He has the ability to hit in the big leagues. You know, he needs to continue to play well and continue to, you know, from a game planning standpoint behind the plate. There's a bunch of nuances to the catching position that just make it very difficult, right? And so, like, he's continuing to work on that. He's an older guy. He's got good baseball IQ. He can swing the bat. You know, he led the league in hitting last year in Winston, and then, you know, struggled offensively this year relative to what he would expect. But if you do look a little deeper, dive into some of the peripherals, he still had a very solid offensive season. He did not get as many hits as he would like, and we understand that and acknowledge that. But we do still believe in the bat. There's no two ways about it. And yeah, he's out here to catch a little bit more and to play a little bit more. And he's a baseball player, man. He really likes to be in between the lines. And you know, he's a competitor. Same thing. Like, if you watch this guy with two strikes, you know, in a big situation, you really get a feel for the type of player that he is and how much he cares about the game.
Paul, really appreciate you running us through the Arizona Fall League roster for the White Sox this year. I know a lot of White Sox fans are really excited about some of these players and hoping that they can get to the big leagues pretty soon. And it sounds like there's at least a couple that could see some big league time as soon as 2025. Thanks so much.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, we got one more. We got Andrew Dahlquist in the Fall League also.
Oh, my goodness. You're right. I didn't scroll down far. Let's talk about Andrew Dahlquist a little bit, too, then. We can't leave him off the list. This is a guy that's been on the radar for White Sox fans for a minute.
Yeah, I would be remiss if we didn't touch on him. So he's same concept. It's, you know, had a really good year in Birmingham, took some huge strides. You know, he did make a little bit of a repertoire change and really excelled with it this year. And honestly, the thing I give him credit for, because there was, you know, a bunch of these guys pitched in Birmingham, and if anybody who watched the playoffs and saw their bullpen in action, I mean, that was definitely a strength of that team. But he, you know, he really exhibited a little bit more of a, you know, pitching in big situations and leverage situations for Birmingham, and really showed, you know, a true competitor side, at least for me, who didn't have the background from the last few years, right? So again, proud of Andrew. He's done a good job. The stuff is real, and similar deal. He's going to need to stay healthy, but it's all of these guys that we're talking about are going to create a little bit of a logjam and make some tough decisions for the front office here in the next couple of years.
I promise you, Paul, first thing I'm going to do when I get to spring training in 2025 is walk up to Andrew Dahlquist and tell him I apologize for forgetting him on the list. I feel terrible about it, and it won't happen again.
No worries. Yeah, Connor, thank you, man. I appreciate it.
That's going to do it for us here on White Sox Weekly. A huge thank you to Paul Janisch, White Sox Director of Player Development, for joining us here this afternoon. We'll be back next week from 1 to 2 on ESPN 1000.